Hello, everyone, and welcome to the call today. I had to dial in for a few times. It wasn't letting me in, but it looks like we're in. Hopefully nobody else had the same challenge. Today is December 15th, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Kurt Mortensen. This is the call where we spend some time together just to talk about a couple of tools of influence and persuasion. We want to talk about how to apply those tools.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we want to be able to take your questions. Make sure that we walk you through it step by step. That is what makes the biggest difference. Before we get started, are there any questions about what we've talked about in the last couple of weeks? Anybody? Anybody? All right. You guys are going to be easy on me today. All right. Let's get into it then. Let's make sure everybody's in. Let me make sure we're recording here. What I want to focus on today is how do you maximize your influence in a position where you're not the boss? Too many people's default setting is do it or you're fired. They think that's persuasion. They think that's the only way you can influence. But you can really maximize your influence when you don't have the power or the position or the authority. Basically, you can convince people when you're not in charge. You can persuade people even though you're not in the right position or they're even above you. You can persuade your boss. You can persuade the CEO of a different company. You can lead when you're not the boss. You can influence when there's no authority. You can win and coach people when you're not the coach, and you can even negotiate when you're not included. Too many people don't realize that they can influence in any situation. It doesn't matter if they're, again, the boss or the CEO or whatever the situation is. You're going to find out there in the world of influence that you don't have a lot of authority. Maybe you don't feel like you have a lot of power, and there's certain things that you can add to your influence toolbox that'll make a huge difference in your ability to influence that type of person. So what I want to talk about is some of those power tools that you can use in a position where you really don't feel like you have that authority or that power or that position. So let's go over a few of these. The biggest one we need to talk about right now that's really critical to your success is a famous 90-20 study, I'll call it. And this is critical in every aspect of influence, whether you have power or authority or not. What the study shows is that when people like you and trust you, you have a 90% chance of persuasion. When people don't like you or don't trust you, you only have a 10% chance of persuasion. It doesn't matter if you have the best deal, the best offer, the best product, the best service, the best track record. It doesn't matter if people don't like you and don't trust you. Because even if you are trying to persuade the CEO and you have a good relationship, they like you and trust you, again, positions in that situation probably does not matter. So to review a few things with you, let's talk a little bit about trust. Do people really trust you? There's the instant trust, which comes from those subconscious triggers, which could be a word choice, a gesture, a smell, the color of your clothes. It could be a variety of things. But then there's also long-term trust, which could come from your character. That's how you tend to treat people, but you don't need something from them. That's you on the inside. It could be your competence. Very difficult to get trust when people do not feel that you have the tools or the knowledge or the ability or the intelligence to solve their problem. Remember, as persuaders, we solve problems. That's what you do. And if you do not come across as competent, very difficult to have that trust. The most important one in this type of situation is the confidence. Didn't say cockiness, I said confidence. Do you exude the confidence that you can solve their problem, that you can do what you want them to do or you're asking them to do? Do you have that credibility, that past history, that track record? Now, the challenge here, whether it be coworkers or people you've worked with before, could be family members or whoever, people will always judge you on your past mistakes and not your future potential. Let me repeat that. People will not judge you on your past mistakes. They'll judge you on your future potential. So even though you feel you're credible, you might not come across that way. And another one with trust is that congruence. Do your actions match your words? People always believe your body language, your vocal tones before the actual words. Trust is a critical thing. It must be earned, and you must have that to be able to influence that authority. You know, you're going into a bank to visit a CEO, to visit a homeowner, to talk to them about a home-based business, to sell your product or service, to talk to a parent about their children, whatever it is, trust is a critical factor. Remember, 90-10, when they like you and trust you, you have a 90% chance of persuasion. But do not make the mistake that people trust you. Because even though you're a good, trustworthy person, it does not mean they trust you. You need to earn that, along with your ability to connect with other people. That is a lot more important than your core competence, is your ability to connect. Because when you have that cooperation, when people feel connected to or similar to you, they feel comfortable around you, they actually want to be persuaded by you. It's much easier to influence that person, especially if you don't feel like you have a lot of authority. Now, we could spend all day on this, but let me give you some of the basics, some fundamentals that you can work on this week. The first thing you can do is find some type of similarity. We like to be persuaded by people that we feel understand us or are similar to us. It could be opinions, it could be lifestyle, it could be background. What can you find in common? I was talking to a student who had a coworker that they couldn't get along, they needed to get along, they didn't get along, they couldn't connect, they had nothing in common. But she overheard her one day about her favorite TV show, and it literally can be this simple. So she started to TiVo it. She started to watch it. She started to bring it up. She started to talk about it. All of a sudden, an instant connection. They both liked the show. They both would talk about the show. What do you have in common? We like to be persuaded with people that we have something in common with. Again, opinion, lifestyle, background, the school you went to, shows you like, sports teams, talking about the football game, baseball game, the university, whatever it is, find something in common. Then, of course, there's the world-famous people skills, where 90% of all people rate their people skills as above average, and we know that's not true, and this is an area where you've never arrived. Because let me talk about something I bring up all the time, but it's so important to understand, is that you tend to persuade others how you like to be persuaded. And that is completely wrong. You need to adapt your people skills, your persuasion skills, to different types of personalities. And Dale Carnegie says the best. He said, by becoming interested in other people, you will get them to like you faster than if you spend all day trying to get them interested in you. You've had the phone calls before or the drop-ins before where they're talking about, hey, the weather, how's your family? And deep down you knew they were going to ask for something. They wanted something from you. So you need to kind of build up that bank account and just to give compliments, to get to know people, to give favors, to do a few things when you're not asking for something in return. People skills. That's so simple, but everybody's flawed. You can do simple things like recalling somebody's name. When you use their name, and it's not a function of memory, it's a function of listening. They've done MRIs on people's brains. It actually triggers in the pleasure center of their brain, and it opens the door for increased influence. Simple thing, don't overuse it, but use their name in a couple of sentences. We know that a smile is very disarming, it's very contagious, and increases sales in retail settings 30 to 50%. We know that showing respect, not demeaning other people, or pulling other people down, or talking bad about other people, or that person, is a big part of people skills. We know that eye contact, listening, and I'm going to spend a lot of time on this, I just want to paint the picture that you could work on this, you could do better in this, and again, when people like you and trust you, 90% chance of persuasion. Another thing here is understanding rapport. When you meet people for the first time, do they connect with you? Or do you have the ability to create that harmonious link? That could be a function of mirror and matching, if you've ever studied NLP. What that does is you're accelerating a natural human function. For example, you watch two people at a party, their breathing rate synchronized, their posture's about the same, they take a drink at the same time. It's a natural thing. So if you can mirror somebody's energy, their posture, some of their gestures, not mimic where you freak them out, but a little mirror and matching, that'll go a long way. And your ability to read nonverbal behavior. Are they indifferent? Are they frustrated? Are they angry? Are they trying to leave? Are they liking you? Are they not liking you? Is something you can definitely read in people. And when you can adapt and customize and build that rapport, you can really learn to connect with people. Another thing, too, that's critical is learning how to contrast. Now, what I mean by this is sometimes what you're asking seems a little too hard, a little too expensive. How can you put that in perspective? Because when you get things like it's too expensive, you've blown your presentation because you haven't built the value. And a lot of times you can do that with contrast. Here's the example. If you had three buckets of water, one was hot water, one was room temperature water, and one was cold water. So you had 1 foot in the hot water, 1 foot in the cold ice water, then you put both feet in the lukewarm water. It's obvious that the one in the hot water would feel cold and the one in the cold water would feel hot because you adjust the perception. So let's talk about ways to do that. The best one that you could implement right now, and I want you to do this week, it's an old sales technique actually, it's called reduce it to the ridiculous. Because a lot of people will resist you, they'll say no because it looks too big, it's too much money, it's too much effort, there's not enough support, I don't know if I can do it. You break it down. So, you know, what we're talking about here is 5 minutes a week. What we're talking about is the cost of a can of soda a day. What we're talking about is a cafe latte a week. What we're talking about is an extra $19 a month. What we're talking about is one extra meeting every quarter. Then it puts it in perspective. Then it seems more realistic to them. It's a very simple thing to do because a lot of people resist you because it looks like it's too much. Now, on the flip side, there's something called sweetening the pot. Now, this is where you really learn to increase the value. And there are a couple ways to do that. It's used to make the deal look sweeter and more appealing, and we see it all the time in infomercials. In fact, how many of you ever bought anything from an infomercial? Say yes. Anybody?
Yes.
You know, a few of you. Does anybody know why infomercials are on late at night? Well, here's another influence strategy for you. They're on late at night, not only because the pricing's cheaper. The biggest reason is because buying resistance is low. You're tired. You're sitting there, and you're watching this infomercial, and you're like, wow, it cuts through a shoe. And you want to buy it. And the thing with an infomercial is they build the value. They start as high as they can. So you're watching for this thing, and you're like, wow, I'd spend $100 for that. They say it's $500. You're like, phew, it's too much. But they've established the value at $500, then they bring it down to $250, but then the value's still at $500. Then they say, but wait, there's more. And they add another $1,000 in bonuses, so all of a sudden you're getting $1,500 worth of stuff for $250. They've created that value. Too many people start way too low. Too many people fight on price. Don't fight on price. Only 6% of our purchases are based on price. Anybody that doesn't know how to influence fights on price. And the values there does not matter. In fact, those of you who have a service-type business, you should charge twice as much because the value's there. Don't fight on price. What you're offering makes a big difference out there. So what can we do? Let me talk about a study. This was done at a bake sale, done over a couple of days in two different audiences. The first day they said, today you get one cupcake and two cookies for 75 cents and 40% bought. The next day, to a different audience, they said, today, you get one cupcake for 75 cents, and as a bonus, you get two cookies. 70% bought. Did you catch that? Went from 40% to 70% for the same offer. All they did was divide it up. So a lot of people do make the mistake of putting everything in one big bundle. You get everything for $1,000. You get everything for $500. You get everything. Break it up into smaller pieces, especially if you tend to get into a negotiation. You want to put a value on everything. Another way to build that value is called DITF, or what's called door in the face. And what we're finding is, especially in a negotiation situation or in a situation where you're building the value, is if you can come with some type of large request, it could be asking for a lot of money, it could be asking for a lot of time, you know they're going to say no. But if you follow that up with a smaller, more reasonable request, statistically they'll accept that one a lot. They'll accept that one much easier. In fact, let me give you a couple of studies. They went to people during a blood drive. You know, a lot of people won't give blood, and so they went up to people and say, hey, excuse me, will you give blood every 2 months for the next 3 years? That's huge. They're like, no. And then they would also go up to people and say, well, would you donate today? Now, here's the power of this study. When they went up to people for the first time and said, will you donate today? 31% said, okay. But they went up to people and said, will you donate every 2 months for 3 years? They're like, no, 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 no. And they said, well, would you at least donate today? It went up to 49%. So it went from 31% to 49% to kind of get that no first, that unreasonable request, then followed up with a reasonable request. We see this in negotiation. Now, it would be nice in a great world where everyone came at the right price, but they're expecting you to come in higher and low. That's part of the strategy. Even they did this at a college study. They went up to people and say, hey, will you do a 15-minute survey? That's a long time, and only 25% said yes. Then the next time they said, hey, will you do a 2-hour survey? They're like, no, no, no. They said, well, could you at least do a 15-minute survey? Because it puts it in perspective. Went from 25% to 50%. In fact, the compliance rate doubled. So a lot of times when you get resistance with influence, is that it might be looking too easy, it might be looking too hard, too much time, too much effort, too much money. You need to put that in perspective. Last tool I want to talk about is known as reciprocity. When we do something for somebody, give them a gift or a favor or a compliment, they have a strong need to return the favor. Now, this is one law that can quickly turn to manipulation, but it's human nature, and this is every culture in the world. When you do something for someone, they kind of have a subconscious urge to do things back. So if you're trying to influence somebody, give them something along the way, not at the same time you're trying to influence them necessarily. Give them a gift, give them a CD, give them some of your time, give them something, and then down the road, they tend to be more open to influence. For example, when disabled American veterans, they send you an envelope and you have free return address stickers, it increases the chances you're going to donate. Doesn't guarantee, it just increases it. Physicians, when they put the $20 bill and ask doctors and physicians to fill out a survey, increase the amount of physicians that did that. There was a professor, a college professor once, that went through the white pages and started addressing Christmas cards to people he did not know. And guess what happens? He sends them out, and he starts getting Christmas cards back. Fast forward 20 years, he's still getting Christmas cards from people he didn't know from an experiment he did 20 years earlier. You should go buy a $20,000 car. You're at a standstill. They say, hey, I'm going to get a Coke. You want a Coke? Yeah, give me a Coke. And they've given you a 50-cent soda, and you have an urge to buy a $20,000 car. And again, careful we don't cross the line of manipulation, but give of your time, resources, gifts. Then down the road, they're much more open to influence. It could be something like information, a favor, a gesture, a gift, a smile, a time, an invitation, a secret, any of those. But here's a big one I really want you to understand, especially in a situation where you don't feel like you have a power or authority. They're also very, very important in negotiations, is what's known as reciprocal concessions. Fancy name, but it's very simple. Basically, when someone persuades you to change your mind, they'll be more inclined to do the same. Meaning, if you go into, whether it be in the workplace or with the CEO or in a negotiation, and you let them persuade you on a few of the minor points, maybe even the points you don't care about, down the road, that person is more open to be persuaded. See, a lot of times we want to resist, no, 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 which causes them to say, no, 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 and you get that roadblock, you get that standstill. Now, let me repeat this. It's very important to understand. When you let them persuade you on a few things, a few minor things right up front, it shows you that you're more open, more willing, but also there's a subconscious trigger later on where they're more open to you when you are influencing or persuading them, whether it be in the same sitting or later on down the road. Our subconscious mind tends to keep a scorecard, and that's known as reciprocity and reciprocal concessions. So what I want you to think about this week as you talk to people and you're out there and influencing, I want you to practice the old reduce it to the ridiculous. I want you to, whether it be price, time, energy, or support, we're talking about an extra 2 minutes a day. What we're talking about is, you know, oh, what could it be? An extra 2 cents a day or $5 a week. Reduce it to make it seem so simple, so easy, so inexpensive that it doesn't seem like it's that much effort. Because a lot of times people resist you just because it seems like it's too much or it's too much work or that's a lot of paperwork or whatever it is. In fact, when we help people write books, a lot of people don't ever get started. They want to do it because they're like, oh, it's so big. We break it down to smaller pieces. Okay, one page a day. Can you write a page a day? 10 pages of research. Can you do that a day? And it seems much simpler because when the mind is overwhelmed, when there's too much, it shuts down and it says no. Make it seem easy, whether it be price, time, energy, or support, reduce it to the ridiculous. Try it out. Even with your kids, as far as doing chores or doing other things, put it in perspective for them, and you'll become more influential. Try out these power tools, and you can influence without authority, you can persuade without position, and you'll see a big difference in your success. With that being said, are there any questions about what we talked about today?
No, Kurt. I don't have any.
No.
Anybody? Questions about what things you're... All right, go.
The DITF?
Uh-huh.
The door in the face?
Yep.
What was that all about again?
That's basically where you're starting really high, and you know they're going to say no. So if you're doing real estate and you say, well, if they want 200 for, you say, well, I'll give you 150. That tends to put in perspective when you're really going to pay 175. So you know you're going to get a realistic no just to kind of set them up and change the perception. Well, let me explain that a little bit better. And a lot of times in negotiation, people will say, don't go first, don't go first. And that is wrong. I'll tell you what the studies show. Is the person that goes first not only shows the other person that they're open to negotiate, but they establish the starting point to the negotiation. So if you can get into a negotiation and start really high or really low, which is the door in the face, then you get to dictate the starting point to the whole negotiation that gives you a lot of power. That is door in the face. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so basically you need to start the negotiation then, not the other person.
Only if you have done your research. Now, if you're shooting in the dark and you have no idea, don't go first. But if you know what it's worth and what you're willing to pay, then it really helps you out to go first.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Any other questions about what we talked about today? Or with things you're running into?
Kurt, I'd like to add one thing that I think might help the group. This is something I've been doing for a little while. When you're kind of moving through learning some of these skills and you see other people in action between a conversation and you can tell it's not going right, you know, maybe interrupting is probably going to be impractical. To help that person out, but in my mind what I'm starting to do now is trying to think about how I would have solved that conversation. It might not even need to even share it with the other person, but just as a mental exercise. And you see it all around you constantly, especially during the holidays. You see a lot of people a little bit frustrated and not really persuading the other person to sometimes get what they're looking for, and you can start to think about how you can use some of your skills as you observe these people.
Oh, that's a great point. You know, how you see people persuading each other, so how would I do that? Why didn't that work?
Or if it worked particularly well, just see what you observed in the conversation.
I agree. If you're watching an infomercial late at night and you're feeling like you need to pick up the phone, well, where's that coming from?
Exactly.
Or you go to the store just to look and all of a sudden you spent $300. Well, what just happened?
Yep.
That's important for you to know, and that's a great point. And that's the thing, when you become really great at influence, you actually appreciate people that are really good at it and to watch them. And
well,
if you ever have a chance to go to, a lot of times they'll have these seminars where every hour and a half someone's persuading you to buy something.
Yeah,
be able to watch, see what they're doing, and adapt that to you can really help you out. Absolutely. Good point. Any other questions out there?
I think that's good.
All right. Well, work on that, especially reduce it to the ridiculous. We put that in perspective. And then, of course, the door in the face. The big lesson there that everyone can work on this week also is, for let me give you an example. If you go to a store, talk to the ladies here, or it could be anybody, and you look at a dress, and at one time it was on sale for, let's say, $400. And then they went to sell it for $300, and now it was on sale for $200. Does that store take all those price tags off, or do they leave them on?
Don't they leave them on and just kind of scratch through them and put the new price down?
Yeah, they put the other one just below it. They don't even try to take it off. So it's now $400 and $300 and $200. And the next one's $150. And think of the mindset here. So now you're looking at this tag. This dress was once $400. They've established the value. You would never pay that. That's door in the face. Now all of a sudden you get a $400 dress for $150. Now fast forward. Let's say you looked at the dress and it just had $150 on it. Now all of a sudden the value's not there. And that's why a lot of times you want to be able to start as high as you can to establish the value. You see this in, for example, car insurance. Well, I need car insurance for the year, and they'll do something like this, and we'll just make up some numbers here. Well, that would be $1,500 for the year. You say, well, wait, you're a non-smoker. Okay, that's $1,200. Oh, wait a minute, your children are on the air honor roll, aren't they? Oh, that bring it down to, you know, $1,000. So, well, for $997 a year, we can insure you, but they've established the value at $1,500, and now you're getting it for
$997. They're not Janice Corbin, you know.
So try it out this week, whether it be time issues or money issues, and that's the goal of this call, is just a quick tool, try it out, make it yours, and then in the future, you won't have to even think about it because it just becomes part of who you are. All right, any last-minute questions, comments, or rude remarks? I'll take them all.
No need to be rude.
I know, I'm just teasing. Well, hopefully not. All right, everyone have a great week. We're getting close to some holidays. Make sure you spend some time with family and friends. And even though, what's the date next week? We will still be on the phone next week. It's not quite a holiday, so we will make sure we are here. And we'll walk you through a few more tools of influence. So we'll go out there and wish you massive success, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care. Morton, can you do the same?
All
have a
right,
good one, Kurt.
Good night, everyone. We'll see
all right,
you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.